I begin, I'd like to thank my collaborators on this project. One of them here is today, Dr. Margaret Rosario in the audience. Other colleagues are Drs. Bryn Austin, Dr. David Whitby, and Lindsay Frazier, all in Boston in the Longwood Medical Area, affiliated with various institutions. I'd also like to thank the funders of the study. As you can see at the bottom, there's numerous. And also the participants of the Growing Up Today study, the ongoing longitudinal cohort study of youth that I'll be talking about, who have been participating in the study for over 10 years now. So without their involvement, we wouldn't have any of this information. So just as a little bit of background, we've seen data today on adults. There's some youth data that suggests that youth who identify as lesbian, gay, or bisexual, or who report sexual attractions to individuals of their same gender or behavior, they're at higher risk for illicit drug use than their heterosexual counterparts. However, a few studies have examined sexual orientation group differences in illicit drug use across a range of sexual orientation groups, and also that include kind of sexual minority youth who may not identify as lesbian, gay, or bisexual, and who describe their sexual orientation as predominantly heterosexual but report some same-sex attractions. Prior research examining risk profiles of these individuals who report some same-gender attractions but identify predominantly as heterosexual suggest that they have patterns of substance use that are more similar to other sexual minority youth. For example, in our GUTS cohort, we showed, or Dr. Austin and colleagues demonstrated in prior studies that these participants were at greater risk for tobacco smoking, alcohol use, as well as some mental health concerns such as bulimic behaviors. In addition, few studies have examined sexual orientation group differences across a range of different types of illicit drug use, such as misuse of prescription drugs in large youth samples. So another issue that I'm going to talk about today is affiliation with the gay community, participation in gay community events and activities. And there's some research out there that shows that affiliation with the gay community can be positively associated with substance use. For example, Rosario and colleagues found that initial involvement in gay-related activities was associated with increased marijuana use in a sample of youth age 14 to 21 years who were recruited from gay-focused organizations. These researchers also found that continued involvement in gay-related activities was associated in a subsequent decrease in marijuana use over time, but there was still elevated use over time. And few studies have examined these issues in larger samples of youth not recruited from gay community settings and from samples that have sort of a heterosexual comparison group to like look at differences in rates of drug use. Thus, we undertook the current study to compare the prevalence of past year drug use among youth reporting different sexual orientations, and we categorized youth as heterosexual, mostly heterosexual, and lesbian, gay, and bisexual. And then a second aim was to examine how frequency of participation in gay community social and educational activities associates with risk of drug use among the participants who describe their sexual orientation as mostly heterosexual, bisexual, lesbian, or gay. So to investigate our aims, we used data from the Growing Up Today study, which I briefly mentioned in the beginning of my presentation. I mentioned that GUTS is an ongoing cohort study of over 16,000 youth, began in 1996, when participants were between the ages of 9 to 14 years. The participants of GUTS are children of Nurses Health Study 2 participants. All their moms are nurses participating in the large Nurses Health Study 2. And since the study's inception, data have been collected annually or biannually primarily through self-administered questionnaires, either in paper or on the web. So for this particular analysis, we just used data from the 2003 wave, and this analysis sample comprises 55% of the original cohort and includes 5,829 females and 3,468 males. The mean age of the participants when they returned the WAVE 2003 questionnaire was 18.6 years. Their age ranged from 16 to 23 years, so this is primarily a sample of high school and college age students. The sexual orientation measure, if any of you heard Dr. Austin present on GUTS, it's a measure that was adapted from Remafetti et al. It's also used in the National Longitudinal Study of Adolescent Health, Wave 3, and it's been kind of used, a similar measure has been used in other studies. And it asks participants, which one of the following best describes your feelings? Response options range from completely heterosexual to completely homosexual. Also in the question, anchors were included. For the completely heterosexual option, the anchor was attracted to persons of the opposite sex. For the bisexual option, it was equally attracted to males and females. And for the completely homosexual group, it was attracted to individuals of the same sex or lesbian or gay. So for this current analysis, we did combine the participants who answered bisexual, mostly homosexual, and completely homosexual into one group, representing lesbian, gay, and bisexual because of the small sample sizes. It would have been ideal to keep the bisexual separate, but we weren't able to do this in this analysis because drug use prevalence can be low. So we also excluded the respondents who weren't sure of their sexual orientation, and you can see the numbers on the screen. So this slide shows the distribution of sexual orientation among males and female participants. As you can see, 3.6% of males identified as mostly heterosexual, 8.1% of females identified as mostly heterosexual. It's a large group, but we also see similar patterns in other studies. And then a total of 2.8% of males and 2.7% of females said they were lesbian, gay, or bisexual. Questions to assess any past year use of marijuana, cocaine, ecstasy, and crystal methamphetamine were included on WAVE 2003 questionnaire. Also, past year use of oxycodone, Ritalin or Adderall, or Valium, Xanax, or Librium without a doctor's prescription was also assessed. In addition, we created a measure of polydrug use where we counted up the number of drugs that the participants reported using in the past year, and any participants who reported using two or more drugs were coded as being polydrug users, which is sort of an indicator of more problematic drug use. So there were two measures on the survey which assessed LGB community involvement or involvement in LGB community activities. And these measures were adopted from a study by Rosario and colleagues. And the two measures were involvement in social activities and involvement in educational activities or meetings. To assess the frequency of involvement in LGB social activities, participants were asked, in the past year, how often did you go to lesbian, gay, or bisexual social events, cafes, dance clubs, bars, or hung around these places? Response options ranged from never to two or more times a week on a 7-point scale that we coded as 1 to 7. So it was a kind of a continuous measure that ranged from 1 to 7. To measure frequency of attending educational meetings, participants were asked, in the past year, how often did you go to lesbian, gay, or bisexual meetings or educational events at a community center or other place? And this measure was coded similarly to the social activities measure and had similar response option range. So analyses were cross-sectional. They were gender stratified. We estimated differences in drug use and how drug use associates with involvement in activities separately for males and females. We used logistic regression to estimate the relative risks of drug use across sexual orientations when the prevalence of drug use in the sample was less than 10%. When prevalence was higher, we used the modified Poisson regression. This is a method that better captures the relative risk when the prevalence is high. And in all models, the referent group was a completely heterosexual group, and we also controlled for age. So here's some of the results. This slide shows the prevalence and relative risks of past year marijuana use by sexual orientation and gender. You have males on the left side, females on the right side. The prevalence is indicated by the bars here, and the relative risks for each group is indicated above in the numbers, and then the 95% confidence intervals for the relative risks are shown in parentheses. And as you can see, mostly heterosexual and lesbian, gay, and bisexual males and females were more likely than their same gender heterosexual peers to report past year marijuana use. And you can see that sexual orientation differences appear to be larger in the females compared to the males. And we'll see similar trends across all of these types of illicit drugs. So this slide shows the prevalence of past year cocaine use. And as you can see amongst the males, risk was particularly high in men who identified as mostly heterosexual or youth males who identified as mostly heterosexual. And then among the females, we see that mostly heterosexual and lesbian, bisexual females were more than 4 times more likely to report past year cocaine use. It's really high. Here's the slide for prevalence and relative risks of ecstasy use by sexual orientation and gender. Again, the sexual minority males and females were much more likely to report ecstasy use, and prevalence is especially high in the lesbian and bisexual females. This shouldn't be surprising. I'm sure other people have seen data, but I think what surprises me the most is the disparities in the females. Especially for crystal meth, here we see sexual minority females again are at very high risk for reporting past year crystal meth use. And bisexual and lesbian girls in particular were over 10 times more likely, and mostly heterosexual girls were more than 5 times more likely to report crystal meth use in the past year compared to completely heterosexual females. Here's the slide that shows prevalence and relative risks for misuse of prescription drugs in the past year. Again, we see similar trends with sexual minority individuals identifying as lesbian, gay, bisexual, or mostly heterosexual, both males and females, more likely to report that they misused prescription drugs in the past year. And as would be expected, based on the results I just showed you, they're also more likely to report polydrug use. All right, so switching gears a little bit, now that I've convinced you that drug use is higher in sexual minority youth, at least in this cohort, but then that's been shown in other samples as well. This slide shows the mean frequency of attending LGB community social activities among males and females, reporting their sexual orientation as mostly heterosexual, bisexual, and lesbian or gay. Here we restricted our analyses only to what I'm calling sexual minority participants. And also here I show the lesbian and gay and bisexual participants separately from the lesbian, gay, and bisexual participants separate from one another because of their differences in mean frequency of attending LGB community social activities. And as we can see in the males, the gay male participants reported a higher frequency of attending LGBT social activities when compared both to bisexual and mostly heterosexual males. And mostly heterosexual and bisexual males did not differ from one another in their mean frequency of attending LGBT social activities. Among females, all three sexual orientation groups differed from one another in their mean frequency of attending LGBT social activities. Lesbians had the highest frequency of attendance, followed by bisexuals and then mostly heterosexuals. Similar patterns are observed with the frequency of attending educational activities. No differences between bisexual and mostly heterosexual males, higher in gay males. All three groups in the females differed from one another. So this slide shows the associations of involvement in LGBT social and educational activities with risk of drug use among gay, bisexual, and mostly heterosexual males. The relative risks shown in the table represent the change in risk of drug use for a one-unit increase in frequency of attending LGBT social and educational activities. The relative risks are adjusted for age and sexual orientation. The relative risks for social activities are adjusted for educational activities, and vice versa, the relative risks for educational activities are adjusted for social activities, so I show the independent associations controlling for one another. And as you can see, the frequency of attending LGBT social activities, this is for the males. Oh, what happened? Sorry, I got ahead of myself. This one's for the males. The frequency of attending LGBT social activities is related to increased risk for ecstasy use, crystal meth use, and polydrug use. But the frequency of attending the educational activities isn't statistically significant. It's not associated with increased risk for drug use. And you see similar patterns in the females where frequency of attending social activities is associated with increased risk for marijuana use, ecstasy use, crystal meth, and polydrug use. But as far as the frequency of attending educational activities, there could potentially be a protective effect going on for cocaine use and crystal meth use, and we see no elevated risk. So to summarize, just to reiterate, prevalence of drug use is higher among sexual minorities. The disparities are larger for females compared to males. And surprisingly, we hear a lot about crystal meth use in the gay male community. It appears from our cohort that it could potentially be something to further investigate in sexual minority females. And involvement in LGBT social activities was associated with greater drug use for males and females alike. Involvement in LGBT educational activities may be protective against drug use among females, not so much amongst males. One reason that youth use drugs is to facilitate social interactions. Social settings are important. Obviously, we can't conclude that attending LGBT social activities causes drug use, in part because of the cross-sectional study design, but causality is also more difficult to prove than just longitudinal versus cross-sectional designs. Other limitations of the study include the potential for bias due to self-reports of sensitive behaviors, as well as bias due to follow-up. Nonetheless, the results of this study suggest that interventions to address drug use in the LGBT community may be able to reach some sexual minority youth at high risk for drug use if these interventions target LGBT social settings. However, youth identifying as bisexual or mostly heterosexual will be less likely to be exposed to LGBT community-focused interventions because they're less likely to participate in LGBT community activities. Alternative settings for reaching mostly heterosexual and bisexual youth will need to be identified. In addition, I think Rosario and colleagues pointed this out that if public health practitioners and people working with LGB youth are interested in preventing drug use, we need to start thinking about the social settings that these youth go to, and we need to start providing alternative places for youth to socialize and connect with one another that facilitates healthy behaviors and also healthy adjustment.
That was a great session, and we have time for questions, so please. Some really great research being done, so yeah. Other questions? I sort of had a couple questions for Heather and Stuart. If maybe you could expand a little bit on implications in terms of intervention, sort of policy level or other kinds of ways that we could intervene with sort of taking the findings that you have come up with, each one.
Actually demonstrating some of the activities. I mean, we have vague theories out there, and then we're trying to apply these vague theories to an underfunded area with no interventions and no, you know, it's this group of people who, if we don't do it ourselves, who will? So it's hard to say. I mean, I think it's really difficult to translate these findings into an intervention that's going to be effective. I think we need to design an intervention. We first need to design an intervention and evaluate it. And then if it's not effective, tweak it based on emerging evidence that what might, information that may point to the different ideologies that contribute to unhealthy behaviors. But, I mean, one thing we can say is youth are very high, that's where we need to capture them, sexual minority individuals. We need to start early at age, 10, the magical age of 10, when their sexual orientation is starting to emerge. We have to capture them immediately and not wait until they're young adults. And that's difficult because I think a lot of people in the LGBT community are afraid of doing interventions with youth because of a lot of the politics around pedophilia being associated with homosexuality. And I think a lot of us adults just want to stay away from youth because we don't want to be stigmatized further. And we need to fight against that, and we need to really provide support for the youth.
There was a question here. Other questions? Comments? Yeah.
Sure.
I think we have a couple more questions, and then we'll have to cut it. So go ahead. We're here and then there. Okay. Perfect. Okay. Great. And this was a great session. Our presenters will still be around, presumably around the conference as well as up here. But thank you for everything you've done. This was great research. I think we should give them one more applause. So.